Hey everyone, and welcome back. This episode and next episode will actually be basically a part one and part two. I'll be discussing Canadian legends. Now, some of them are more myth, and some of them appear to have quite a lot of fact behind them. But you'll be getting a variety regardless. So this episode in particular, I will be talking about a tobogganing spirit, yes, very Canadian ghost, in Montreal, a ghost ship in New Brunswick, and an abandoned cemetery. Thank you so much for joining me again, and if this is your first time listening, welcome, and I really hope that you enjoy. I would also like to remind all of you that you can have your very own piece of Real Scary merch. Just check out my website at realscarypodcast.ca, and it's under the heading Merch. And I also have stickers in stock as well, so if you would like those will come with a personalized note from myself. If you enjoy this episode, please consider subscribing to the podcast and giving it a 5-star rating on whichever platform you listen on. This will really help me be able to be exposed to new listeners and thus grow my show and allow me to do even more. Now, without further ado, let's get started. So the first story that we're going to get into is the story of the Old Lion's Lair in Montreal. Simon McTavish was born in the Scottish Highlands in 1751. In 1757, his father John was severely injured while fighting for the British in Nova Scotia in the Battle of Louisbourg. He was just well enough to be sent back home to his family, but died shortly thereafter. Simon's older brothers were taken under the care of a family friend, and at 13, Simon went to New York to live with his sister and her husband. McTavish was said to be a hard worker and quickly found an apprenticeship in New York. He was soon working for himself, swiftly working his way up through the fur trading business. By 25, he had founded the Northwest Company, which provided him a massive fortune. One article said that McTavish was also known as always falling in love or being in love. But by 1793, he finally stuck with one woman and married Montreal local Marie-Marguerite Chavoilet. They would go on to have 6 children, 4 of whom would survive. At one point, McTavish and his wife relocated to London after his retirement from the fur trade. And this is where he was hoping to make their permanent home. But his wife was very homesick, and they ended up returning to Montreal. McTavish is said to have promised his wife to build her a castle on top of Mount Royal. Beginning in 1800, he set out to do just that. So I'll post an artist rendering of what the home was meant to look like. It was pretty impressive. The central portion of the home was flanked by 2 circular wings, with French domed roofs, arched windows, and high ceilings. It was quite the home. But in 1804, just after the roof had been finished, Simon McTavish, quote, dropped dead. It's believed that he died of pneumonia from a cold that he caught from being on the site so often overseeing the work. Now, of course, with many things, rumors created different narratives of the story, one that he hung himself from a beam in the mansion, but this is just not true. McTavish passed in a home that he had been renting while his new home was being built. He would be brought back to the property, however, to be buried in a mausoleum just off the main path in Mount Royal. His young wife would remarry quickly, which was not uncommon at the time, and she and their 4 children moved, leaving the mansion abandoned and boarded up. Stories and legends were told of the home being haunted pretty much from the time of McTavish's death until its demolition in 1861. There were stories of people passing the mansion grounds in the night and seeing McTavish wandering around the ruins. Others spoke of a creature dancing on the roof in the moonlight and white creatures jumping in and out of the windows. There were also claims of hearing moans, screaming, and even the gurgling sounds of a man dying from strangulation, emanating from the property. Over the years, these things have been explained away by many natural explanations. The gurgling? There's a brook that ran under the house. The moans and screams? Simply squatters taking refuge in an abandoned home. And the apparition on the roof? Well, that's easy. A trick of light off the tin roof under the moon. However, I haven't found an answer for the most popular story, and my personal favorite. That McTavish is seen tobogganing down the hill in his coffin. Yes, this is the tobogganing spirit of Montreal, and you can't get more Canadian than that. So the home was demolished in 1861, and during the demo, a worker did fall to his death. Now, this only fueled the belief that McTavish was vengeful of anyone who would disturb his castle. The mausoleum was eventually also demolished, as of course it only encouraged grave robbers and vandals. Now, the stories around McTavish faded over the years, but those who know the story might be on the lookout for a tobogganing ghost on clear nights. The next story that I want to talk about is the story of the fireship of Baie des Chaleurs, also referred to as the Chaleur Phantom or the Phantom Ship. This phantom ship has been witnessed by hundreds of people, perhaps thousands of accounts over the years. You know that I love me some good personal accounts, and this one has had many. The origins of this story are somewhat unknown. When we're talking about events that occurred in the mid-1700s, and even earlier than that, things can definitely get a little hazy. This phantom ship is commonly linked to the Marquis de Malos, a French warship that was sunk by the British in the 1760s during the Seven Years' War. Another more romantic story tells of a group of pirates who overtook the vessel and ravaged a young bride. They found their ship engulfed in flames in revenge for their horrific act. Legend goes that the bride's dying words were a curse upon them. Quote, "For as long as the world is, you may burn on the bay." And thus, their souls are doomed to sail the waters of the Chaleur Bay aboard their fiery ship. But it's also been connected to a story from as far back as 1501. The story is of a Portuguese captain by the name of Jasper Coste-Real and his brother Miguel. Jasper is believed to have been a bit of a scam artist, trading cheap trinkets and guns to the indigenous people in return for valuable furs. He became even more consumed by his greed and decided to invite a group of indigenous people onto his ship, offering them all the whiskey and food that they could imagine. Once aboard, he waited until they were intoxicated and chained them up, setting sail back to Portugal, where he sold them as slaves. The prophet was too much to resist, and he returned again with plans of abducting more people. However, word had spread of the activities of his last trip, and they were ready for him if he should ever dare to return. So as Jasper had anchored his ship, a group boarded and killed all those who were on board, leaving Jasper to suffer a slow and agonizing death. Legend has it that they tied him to a rock to wait for the tide to come in and slowly drown him. Jasper's brother Miguel arrived 2 years later in search of his beloved brother and was happy to see his ship when he came into the bay. Miguel and his crew boarded the ship only to find that there was no one there. A large group of indigenous men attacked. Miguel and his crew, knowing that they were about to lose a fight, set the ship ablaze, vowing to haunt the bay for 1,000 years. Apparently, only one indigenous man survived to tell the tale. Regardless of the origins, generations of Canadians have seen a burning ship on the bay for hundreds of years. In fact, in an article for Maclean's magazine, they claimed that this phenomena had been witnessed more than any other Canadian unexplained apparition. People have even attempted to pursue it, but much like the gold at the end of a rainbow, it always appears to be the same distance away. Some say that it looks just like an arc of light, and others say that it looks like a vessel engulfed in flames. Sometimes it can remain for hours, eventually fading away, and other times it will appear a bright, glowing mass only to vanish quickly. Some have also seen it skimming over the waves. In that same McLean's article, there was a story of a person who moved to Caraquet in 1939. One night, he witnessed the fire ship and called the RCMP. I realized before I throw around the RCMP, we do have listeners who don't live in Canada. That's the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Anyway, so he called the RCMP. He told them to come urgently. There was a schooner burning a couple miles from shore. The officer on the other end said, quote, "Don't worry. It isn't a schooner. If you believe in ghosts, it's a ghost. If you don't believe in ghosts, it's a natural phenomenon. It's the fire ship. You're a stranger here, but you'll get used to it." Now, if he stayed in town, I assume that he did get used to it, just like most of the other residents here. One citizen said that he has seen the ship hundreds of times through his life. And he said that yes, sometimes it looks like a shapeless ball of fire, but usually it looks like a sailing vessel wrapped in flames. There have also been sightings of this ill-fated ship with even more detail. Witnesses claiming to see people running along the decks of the burning ship, burning themselves with no escape from the flames. And this Spectre crew is even seen in such detail that it's said that their uniforms are blue. So of course, being a phenomenon that has occurred over such a long stretch of time with so many witnesses, it has been studied many times. There have been conclusions drawn, but definitely nothing that everyone can agree on. Some speculations include rotting vegetation underwater, releasing natural gases, but one of the most popular theories is St. Elmo's fire. So let's quickly talk about what that is exactly. St. Elmo's fire is a phenomenon in which the electrical field around an object causes an ionization of the molecules surrounding an object. This causes a glow in the air. Nitrogen and oxygen in our air causes the glow to appear blue or violet. The shape of an object is also important. Basically, pointy and tall objects are the most compatible with St. Elmo's fire. So the steeple of a church or the mast of a ship would be ideal. I would also like to note that it is usually accompanied by a crackling or hissing sound as well, and usually before a storm, because it is often related to lightning. So here are the holes with that theory. As pointed out by many scientists and scholars over the years, while the phenomena is often seen before a storm, which would line up with this theory, it has been seen in all seasons. Next, there is no ship present for the St. Elmo's fire to occur on. It is attracted to a ship's tall mast, which is great, but there's still no ship actually there. It is simply a flat expanse of water. And finally, there is no sound to speak of. There has never been a crackling or a hissing sound connected to the site of the fire ship. The theory of rotting vegetation or something else that could create trapped gas underwater is shaky at best. Scientists pose the question, what would be around to ignite the gases? And more importantly, if it rose from one spot, why is it impossible to approach? Why would it always remain the same distance away? That is an excellent question, and really one that would apply to any of these theories that have been put forth. Even St. Elmo's fire, why can you not approach it? Possibly it could be a trick of light, but this takes place over different times of day, and yes, mostly at night, but some have claimed to see it during the day. People will also witness it from different distances, during different seasons. So I think that both of these theories in particular are just not applicable here. This is such an amazing legend. I love it. I feel like the more that I read about this case, it's less legend for me and more a legitimate unexplained phenomenon. So let me know what you think about the fire ship of the Baie des Chaleurs, and better yet, let me know if you have seen it. The last legend that I want to share with you is out of Manitoba. This is the legend of the Ness Cemetery. On the southwest side of Lake Winnipeg, there is a small river, the Icelandic River. Hidden in the marshlands off of this river is a cemetery. The graves are no longer marked. The only marker to let you know that there is a cemetery is a sign with the name Ness Cemetery and a lone stone angel. There are a few reasons that people should avoid visiting this location, but we'll get into that in a minute. In the 1870s, this area saw a large amount of Icelandic settlers. They displaced local indigenous groups and brought with them smallpox. This ravaged the community within a year. Smallpox graveyards littered many places during this time, and the location that would come to be known as Ness Cemetery was the largest established cemetery at the time. It was quickly filled to capacity, and by 1880, there was no more room. In 1883, the land was settled on. Yeah, you heard that right. Only 3 years after no more dead could fit in this cemetery, someone decided it would make a great settlement. He leveled all of the graves, removed their wooden markers, and built a home for he and his family. So some say that he named it Nastrand, which means corpse strand. And I read another account that said that it was already named before he settled there, and the name in this case was Graftarness, which meant grave point. Either way, the name was shortened to Ness. Needless to say, he did not have a successful life. He died a bloody death in the home of a tumor, apparently, just a few years later in 1890. His wife refused to continue living in the home and left with their children, never to return. The crumbled foundation remains there to this day, hidden among vegetation. So clearly this is a really unsettling and creepy place, and people thought so back then too. There is a story of a little boy who lived on the land just across from Ness. He was walking home one evening when he heard someone calling him from the farmhouse, but thankfully he ran home and not to the creepy house. Other townspeople spoke of seeing strange lights in the home, and even strange lights have been seen floating over the cemetery. There are stories of apparitions seen in and around the home as well. The prevailing legend is that the graveyard is haunted by many spirits who will attempt to drag the living into the marsh. I mentioned that there were a few reasons that it was dangerous to visit this location, and the potential to be dragged underground by a vengeful spirit is definitely one of them. But also the ground is just simply too unstable. There are deep holes that are not easily seen. Even the old cellar of the farmhouse is still present, but covered by overgrown vegetation. Another reason, as stated by a scientist and researcher, Chris Rutkowski, for an article by Mysterious Universe, said that the smallpox virus stays active for 200 years. So you really don't want to mess around with a smallpox burial ground. This cemetery often sees skeletal remains unearthed with the flooding that occurs yearly. There were between 70 to 100 burials here. The land is currently Crown land, and if remains are unearthed, they are reinterred by the municipality. Some residents will even just take care to rebury them where they lie. So, I hope you have all enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to check out the blog for this episode and let me know what you think about these legends. Had you heard them before? Had you heard a different version? Do you think that there's a logical explanation for the fire ship? And what are some local legends from your area? Feel free to reach out to me. I would love that. Thanks again for listening. Please consider leaving me a 5-star review wherever you listen. I would really, really appreciate it. Don't forget that you can purchase your own Real Scary merch. Just head over to realscarypodcast.ca and it's under the heading merch. Be sure to follow me on social media. I am on Instagram and Facebook at Real Scary Podcast. You can also send me an email at realscarypodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, this is your friendly neighborhood host, Elise.